Hello, and welcome to the Villains and Monsters podcast, where true crime meets thrilling fiction and dark minds come together to talk about all things sinister and psychotic. I'm Cassie Sharp, suspense and thriller author, and your host. Hello, welcome back to Villains and Monsters, episode 13, also known as Where the Shadow Lies, the audio cast. I'm Cassie Sharp, author of Where the Shadow Lies, my debut psychological thriller. Today we're going to hear chapters 29 and 30. This is the moment in the book that I like to call the calm before the storm. They're slower paced, but still packed full of change and tension and suspense. And they're the vital segue into the climax. So make sure you listen to find out, one, how do JL and Xander progress now that they've kissed? Even though this isn't a romance, it's still part of the story. And where the hell did Jason go and what was in that envelope? So make sure that you listen to the next couple chapters and find out those questions. And then, ladies and gentlemen, we will be in the beginning of the climax. Right. So after this episode, we ramp up to the conclusion. Like I said, you're going to have more episode or more chapters per episode. I think the next couple of them have three. Are you ready? Because I'm fucking excited. This is by far the funnest part of the book when everything comes together and all these little lies that have just been thrown and on top of each other. And there's so much uncertainty and we don't know what the hell is going to happen. This is when it all becomes clear. So this is my shit right here. So I'm excited. Anyway, so let's recap last episode. Real quick before we get into the chapters. So last episode, so we had JL who wanted to have a conversation with Jason on Skype and she's got to talk to him. And then Lucas Grisby, that complete and total shit stain, came to her house, assaulted her. Xander got pissed off. They were able to get Jason out of jail because Jason had an alibi. Sorry, my dog is walking around. He's mad at me. He wants to go out and I've got the door closed. Just hold on, Bane. Just be a couple more minutes. Okay, sorry. Xander is pissed and Jason gets out of jail and he talks to his mom. She finally tells him the truth about his father, how he's a monster, how Jason is basically the product of torture and rape. And this fucks Jason up, right? And he's sitting at home drinking. He's got vengeance coursing through him, rage coursing through him. Then shame comes in the mix and he's thinking the darkest thoughts he can possibly think. And finally, he settles on vengeance and he leaves and he drops a letter on his counter. So what the fuck was in that letter? Well, I guess you're about to find out. Let's go. Chapter 29. From his position at the kitchen table, he could see her clearly on the back porch. She was at war with herself. She'd lit, inhaled once or twice, and stubbed out three cigarettes now. Though the urge to go to her was strong, Xander refrained. She needed to work shit out in her head. That's how she coped. Each time in the past when he'd try to comfort her, she'd retreated further into herself. To be honest, he didn't much care for cigarette smoke, but he did care for her, and if Marlboros came with the package, he'd gladly take it. One thing he'd noticed, though, was she never smoked in front of Jason. In fact, more than once he'd witnessed her hide her pack when her son came around. Either smoking was another thing she'd hidden from him for years, or the nicotine habit was a new development. He watched her light, puff once, and stub out another cigarette. Perhaps she was trying to quit. It was early still, but Xander had plans for the two of them today. They had a bit of a drive ahead, so he was relieved when she turned to come into the house. She spotted him immediately, embarrassment speckling her cheeks. "How long have you been sitting there?" Xander shrugged. "Not long." JL poured them each a cup of coffee. When she brought them to the table and sat across from him, Xander took a deep breath. "I want to take you somewhere today." The fear of rejection drummed a strong beat in his chest. She took a large gulp from her mug.
"When do we leave?" "That's it?"
He raised an eyebrow. "Is that a yes?" She nodded. "Easy peasy." There was something different about her. He'd noticed small things at first. More eye contact, less shyness, a touch here and there. She laughed and smiled more. She was more open with her feelings, and he hadn't seen her rub her fingers in days. As pissed off as he'd been that she'd gone to see that prick of a lawyer alone, he had to admire her courage. Then yesterday, that kiss. Fuck if that wasn't the best damn kiss of his life. Now that Mike had taken over security, Xander felt less stretched. He wanted to enjoy his time with her. He wasn't oblivious to the fact that there was still a psycho out there somewhere, and he almost wished the guy would resurface so they could catch him, but he trusted Mike to do his job. Xander had two objectives: to protect her and to shower her in light and happiness. Now that he had help in the first, he could focus more on the second. He smiled. 1 hour. To his utter amazement, JL nodded again. "I'll go get ready." She downed the rest of her coffee and left, without question. There was a gentle, warm breeze in the air. It lifted the hair around JL's face as she gazed upon the lush vineyard. Huber's winery and farm was beautiful this time of year, but usually packed full of people. It was pumpkin picking season, and Huber's was the iconic place within a 100-mile radius to pick them. Xander had purposely chosen the morning of a weekday to bring JL here. He knew crowds were not her thing, but he wanted her to see the magic of this place. Now, she stood next to him, mesmerized by the shining waters of the lake in the distance. Xander wished he'd brought a camera. Her black, wavy hair stuck out, a stark contrast to the yellow, orange vines and silvery, rippling water. She hadn't spoken much since they began their stroll, but he didn't mind her silence. She had a way of speaking with more than words. She spoke with her eyes, the expressive pools of honey. They always betrayed her first reaction, either go to hell or thank God. She spoke with her body. She leaned into him multiple times as they walked the grounds. "I like you." She spoke simply with her actions. They were always genuine. Her getting in his truck that morning with no questions. "I trust you." As they surveyed the land, he imagined her silence said, "There are no words to adequately describe this beauty." He felt much the same way every time he looked at her. "Would you like to know what those grapes taste like?" She turned to him, her hair fanning to the side with the wind. "Yeah." Halfway back through the grapevines, JL tentatively grabbed his hand. "I might really like you." Xander smiled. That was enough for him. For now. Once they crossed the narrow bridge over the small stream that flowed from the lake, all the buildings came into view. They turned left toward the square, following the empty path that led them to the building for wine tasting. It was a large structure, its shape resembling that of an antiquated barn. When Xander reached for the door, he noticed her absence right away. JL stood back, transfixed by the sight in the center of the square. Long trailers that held every fall harvest staple lined the pavement in rows. Gourds, pumpkins, and squash in a variety of colors and sizes flowed over each trailer, creating a pop of autumn, orange, and yellow. A feast for eyes weary from the green of summer. JL walked, trance-like, through each row. He watched as her small hands touched the rolls and ripples of the produce, worshiping the imperfections of each one. I'm going to marry her. The thought came unbidden and left as quickly. He wasn't even sure she liked him most of the time. She wandered to the opposite side of the square and disappeared into the farmer's market. Xander followed at leisure, allowing her space, yet wanting to see what piqued her interest. Once inside, he spotted her in front of a table of freshly picked apples. She wore a look of wonderment. It was as carefree as he'd ever seen her, and he wanted to burn the image into his retinas for a lifetime of vivid memory. "Do you want to get some to take home?" He gestured to the fruit. As if she'd just noticed his presence, she startled at his voice, whipping her head his way. It was the first time she'd made eye contact for more than a few seconds since they'd arrived at the winery. He hadn't minded, though. Through her reaction to every sight, he'd found a new, purer beauty in this place himself. Her eyes rendered a new thought as she held his, one he couldn't interpret. They were searching, almost intrusive. He tried to convey his own feeling through his stare. "I want to kiss you again." "Yes, I'd love some," she said as she glanced back to the table. They left the market with a shit ton of apples and 2 cups of cider, which they drank, crossing back through the harvest square. In retrospect, it was not a great idea to drink the cider before their wine tasting. The sweetness of the apples and cinnamon made the first 4 samples taste bitter, though perhaps it was due to his wine illiteracy. JL seemed to enjoy all the reds, though he noticed she savored the blackberry wine most. 10 shots later, he was feeling a little tipsy and a lot less manly for it. They just walked down the stairs, heading out the door, when he put a hand on JL's arm to halt her. "I forgot something. I'll be right back." Xander jogged up the stairs, back to the lady who'd provided all their samples. "Can I get 3 bottles of the blackberry?" He actually hadn't minded that one and thought the two of them could enjoy some later this evening. She took her sweet time bagging the bottles, making Xander's legs shake and hands sweat. Though he knew 1 or 2 of his employees were close by, he didn't like JL to be out of his sight for too long, not with some sick fuck still at large. When she finally handed the bags of bottles to him, Xander raced back down the stairs and out the front door. While they'd been shooting wine, Huber's had gotten crowded. Families milled about the square. Children were hoisted onto the trailers amongst the pumpkins for photos. Mothers paced back and forth, herding their flocks toward the next activity. JL was nowhere to be found among them. Xander darted through the melee, almost knocking over a trailer of squash in his haste to get to the farmer's market. He scoured the store for her. She wasn't there. When he stepped back into the square, he dialed her number. No answer. Shit. He made a left. On the other side of the market, a line had formed for a tractor ride through the pumpkin fields. He searched every face. Panic set in when he realized she wasn't here either. Xander zipped back through the square, ignoring the dirty looks from the crowd. When he emerged on the path leading back to the stream, he called Mike. Voicemail. He had to stop himself from throwing his phone. Jogging down the pavement, instead of crossing the bridge that led back to the vineyards, he made a right. This part of the farm was even more crowded, the kids' play area. It was unlikely JL had wandered here, but he had to look anyway. He bypassed the pony rides, swing sets, and playgrounds. Ahead, there was a large hill with tunnel slides that descended down each side. Eyes on the top, he searched for her there. Kids were lined up to get a turn down the hill, but he saw no raven-haired angel among them. 2 more phone calls, 2 more voicemails. Fuck! He didn't notice it at first, the silence that had descended upon the area. Xander looked up to find every set of eyes on him. Mothers looked enraged and horrified. Children had rounded eyes that said, "You're in big trouble, mister." Xander eased his way out of the crowd. He moved toward the hillside, still noting the glares cast his way. The noise of the crowd had just started to pick up again when he heard it. A scream. Her scream. He'd heard it before. The sound seemed to come from the other side of the hill. Xander ran. He zigzagged around children and strollers, picnic tables, and dogs. When he emerged on the other side, a leaden brick of dread settled in his stomach. The huge, infamous corn maze loomed ahead. She had to be in there. Shit. JL, he called when he entered the maze. Nothing. He turned right, then left, then right, right, left. He called to her each turn and was answered with nothing but the rustle of withered corn stalks in the breeze. He yelled her name again and again. Turn, yell, nothing. Yell, turn, nothing. At some point, a few punk-ass kids in the maze somewhere began to mock him. JL, he would call. JL, they screamed back. But nothing from her. Nothing from the only person that mattered. That had ever mattered. Xander stopped running. He looked around at the walls of dead corn. Had he been here already? Had he gotten turned around somehow? He'd heard others as he ran through the maze, but had yet to see anyone. What was he missing? Where were they? Where was she? Xander glared at the stupid fucking walls of the maze. He'd never liked these things, even as a kid. They'd always reminded him of that Stephen King movie about the hotel. His gaze pierced the stalks, and that's when he saw it. Blood. He screamed her name again as he walked toward the stained leaf. The blood was fresh, still wet. JL! Sick of twisting and turning, Xander bolted through the wall. When he was through to the other side, his decision had been made. He would run in a straight line right through each wall of corn until he reached her. He pulled out his gun from behind his back, disengaged the safety, and took off. The walls weren't particularly wide, but they were thick with vegetation. Each time he burst through one, the bristly stalk scratched his skin. And every time he emerged inside a pathway of the maze, he stopped to peer in both directions. Sure, he had to be nearing the maze center. Xander slowed his pace. He hadn't counted the walls he'd ran through, but he was pretty sure it was in the double digits. He was standing in a pathway, one much smaller than the rest, when he heard her voice. She's close. Unsure of what he was about to walk into, he crouched down when he reached the next wall. Gun first, he eased himself into the dead corn. Small, silent movements, carefully placed footsteps, stealth. At the far edge of the wall, Xander stopped. He could see through the leaves of the row in front of him. Dark jeans, blue sweater, black hair. His shoulders sagged. He inched his body closer, looking all around the center square. She was alone. JL, he called, making sure to keep his voice low. He moved the leaves out of his way. She sat on the ground, chin propped on knees, her head turned toward him. Xander? He emerged from the brush, thinking every deity ever worshipped by anyone. She was okay. He jogged to her. When he saw her face, a tick began in his jaw and his trigger finger tapped to the same rhythm. One entire side was a swelling mass of deep purple. Blood dripped from her mouth. He gazed into her eyes and was floored. He'd expected to see fear there, the fear he'd witnessed in her eyes time and time again. Instead, he saw fierce and fiery determination. Fury was there too, but it was calculating, entirely sane. What happened? Some asshole tried to steal my purse. I hung on. He hit me and pushed me into the corn, and then I tripped over a rock or something. I can't put any pressure on my ankle. Xander scanned the area, the clutch on his weapon steady and sure. He ran off, she added, glaring in the opposite direction. Xander was at her side in two steps. Kneeling next to her on the cold, hard dirt, he took her hands in his own and couldn't help but notice how steady hers were. Placing the gun in her palm, he looked up into her questioning eyes. Hold on to that for me for a minute, she nodded. He brushed aside her thick hair with his fingers, exposing the side of her face. Her cheek had already swelled to double its size. Xander's throat constricted in his outrage. Her delicate, creamy skin. He trailed the bruise down to her split lip. The blood had mostly stopped flowing, but her lip would be tender for a few days at least. You're trembling and your face is all scratched up, she said, placing her free hand over his.
I thought, he shook his head. I thought I'd lost you, that you were taken or hurt worse. Her eyes, fierce and steady, searched his. I'm okay. He nodded while caressing her head with his fingers. I can't lose you. He planted a lingering kiss on her forehead. Which ankle? After she pointed it out, he took great care in removing her shoe and sock. Her ankle was swollen, but not terribly so. Likely she twisted it. Xander surveyed the square. There were four different openings. Do you know the way out? She shook her head. I don't even know how I got here. He attacked me somewhere else. After he pushed me down, he got hold of my purse, and he rushed away but kept dropping shit out of it. I followed the trail here and found my whole bag on the ground. She pointed a few feet away. There. I got up a few times to try to find my way out, but it hurts too much. Something felt off. What did he steal? JL shrugged, looking perplexed. Nothing that I can find. My cash, cards, phone, all of it's there. In one quick move, Xander retrieved the gun from her grasp, stood in front of her, and began scanning the maze around them. She was lured here. Did you get a good look at the guy? His voice was low, menacing, vigilant. She nodded, and he wanted to fucking scream. They needed to get out of this place. They were too vulnerable, too exposed. Do you know how to shoot a gun? JL raised an eyebrow. Been a while, but yeah, I know the basics.
Good.
He grabbed her shoe and purse and set them in her lap. Handing his gun to her, he said, safety's off. It's ready to go. I tell you to, you point and shoot and don't think twice. Just don't shoot a kid. He smiled and winced all at once. At her firm nod, he stooped to pick her up behind her knees and under her arms. Looking around at his four choices, he frowned. Which one? Just go through it. JL pointed to the wall closest to them. His eyes snapped to hers. Her face was close, inches away. The bruising and swelling didn't take away from her beauty. Not at all. The urges to strangle the bastard who hurt her and kiss all her pain away burned in tandem through his gut. I don't want you to get all scratched up. She smiled as her eyes darted away. I'm ready to get the hell out of here, Xander. So was he. Okay, Angel, duck your head into my shoulder. She cocked her head. But what about? She waved the gun back and forth. He smiled and kissed her forehead. I'm not going to stop running until we're out of here. Minutes later, they emerged from the backside of the maze, gingerly placing her on the ground while still keeping his arm around her for support. He eased his gun out of her hand. A scan of the area proved there was nobody back there. Satisfied that they were relatively safe, Xander holstered his gun, swooped JL into his arms, and set off for his truck. As far as first dates went, this one had hell written all over it.
What the hell happened? Xander asked. He and Mike sat on JL's back porch while she cooked supper. As soon as they'd gotten home, he'd wrapped her ankle and told her to rest. She wouldn't have it. She claimed the wrapping helped and she wanted steak. She downright refused to allow him to make it, so she was in the kitchen cooking while Xander confronted his partner. He'd sent a text to Mike on the way back from Huber's, telling him to meet here. Me and the wife got stuck at my girl's school. Parent conference. Couldn't answer my phone unless I wanted to sleep on the couch. That explained why he hadn't answered his phone, but it did not explain where the security team had been. He hadn't seen them once after they'd arrived at the winery. And the team? Mike leaned forward. They were with you. I didn't see them. Not once. They're not here either. Didn't you notice? JL got mugged, Mike. He clenched his fists. Someone attacked her. Hurt her. How the hell does that happen to a woman with a security team? Mike hadn't yet seen JL. Hadn't witnessed the damage for himself. She was what? Mike stood. He turned and marched right to the back door. Xander didn't stop him. Mike was a good man. He'd been raised by women and found violence toward them abhorrent.
He needed to see it for himself. JL was wrapping potatoes in tinfoil when they walked in. She glanced at Mike, a wicked grin on her face. "Well, hello there, Michael. Miss me yet?" She stabbed one of the potatoes with a fork. Mike was rooted in place, staring at her in silence. It was getting worse. The skin under her eye and almost her entire cheek were swollen, black. Paired with her smile, Xander shook his head. She was different. JL perched one hand on her hip. "You still giving me the silent treatment?" Mike let out a long breath. He moved to her, stopping an arm's length away, and nodded toward her cheek. "I'm sorry about that, Miss Tyndall. It is absolutely unacceptable for it to have happened, especially on my watch." JL waved it off. "Oh, this?" She pointed to her cheek. "Nothing but a little bruising. It didn't even hurt much." She winked at him. If it weren't entirely inappropriate, Xander would have smiled. Xander crossed his arms as he gave Mike a pointed stare. "As you can see, she was attacked. So, let's hear who was on the team today." "Chris and Seth," Mike said, wincing. His partner knew he wouldn't approve, but chose to put Seth on the case anyway. He and Mike didn't disagree much. In fact, they were typically one step ahead of one of the other, aligned in their decisions. This, though, this was bullshit. "Well, we have our answer then, don't we?" Xander spit. "I told you that kid wasn't capable, and you assign him to this case? Are you shitting me right now?" Mike looked down to his boots, then back up again, locking eyes with Xander. "Chris called me once while I was in the conference. When I got out, I called him back, and he informed me y'all were headed home. All he said about the winery was that it was crowded and they did their best to keep her in sight at all times. I also missed a call from Jack, so I called him next. What he told me had me calling Chris back and ordering him to go to..." Mike glanced over to JL, who was listening to every word. "To go somewhere else until I could speak to you." Mike nudged his head toward the back door. Xander caught JL's gaze. She was watching him, waiting for his response. This was a test, one he'd not fail. "Ordering Chris to go where, Mike?" Xander asked. JL crossed her arms around her stomach. "Whatever you have to say, say it. JL won't be kept in the dark," Xander said to Mike while staring at JL. Her eyes ignited with white, hot emotion. His breath hitched. She'd never looked more beautiful. Mike shook his head, gesturing to the table in the corner. "Let's sit down, then." He pulled out a chair for JL. Once they were all seated, Mike sighed and turned to her. "All right, here's the deal. After the two of you dropped Jason off at home last night, I sent one of our men, Jack, to sit on his house. He called this afternoon to tell me there had been zero movement at Jason's all day. Not a light turned on, not a curtain moved, nothing. I told him to go knock on the door. He did that, but nobody ever answered. He tried the handle, and the door was unlocked. When he entered, he searched for Jason, but he wasn't there." Xander watched JL swallow the news as she grabbed his hand under the table. "So, where is he?" Her voice was steady. Confident. "We aren't exactly sure." Mike shifted in his seat. "There was a letter sitting on his kitchen counter." He paused, wringing his hands together on the tabletop. It's addressed to your son." JL squeezed his hand. "What does it say?" Xander asked. JL seemed to be holding her breath, unable to speak. Mike looked to Xander and widened his eyes. "I'm not sure she should hear this." Xander's pulse sped as he nodded for his partner to continue anyway. "I have a picture of it." Mike pulled his phone from his pocket and placed it on the table between Xander and JL. Holding hands, they read it together. The only word Xander could form afterward was, "Shit." Chapter 30. JL was pouring coffee in their travel mugs when the doorbell rang. It was early, the sunlight just beginning to seep through the open blinds in her kitchen. It was probably someone on the security team. They were taking two men with them today, and Mike would fly down tomorrow.
I'll get it,
Xander called from somewhere in the house. She sighed. It didn't even feel like her house anymore. It felt like theirs. The thought made her simultaneously roll her eyes and smile down into her coffee.
Y'all going somewhere?
JL was so shocked to hear her voice, she forgot she was pouring coffee and it overflowed. She leapt out of the way and set the pot back on its warmer. Turning, she smiled at the woman who stood in her kitchen.
Gran!
She yelped before throwing herself at the old woman. She hugged Gran for 2 seconds, then it felt awkward. JL was not a hugger. When she pulled away, she looked down at her hoodie, studying the album cover it displayed. Shinedowns, I'll follow you.
Yeah, Gran, I was going to call you when we got on the road. We need to go out of town for a few days.
Xander leaned against the far wall, a soft smile aimed at the two women. Gran closed the space between them, looping her arm through JL's.
Well, I guess I got good timing then. Where y'all going? And JL,
she squeezed her arm. You plan on eloping somewhere with my boy without me there? We gonna have problems, honey. JL felt Graham's warm smile all the way to her toes. This woman was sunshine. Wouldn't dream of it, JL winked. Gran narrowed her eyes, her smile faltering when she caught sight of JL's cheek. She attempted to cover it with her hand, but Gran stopped her with a gentle touch on her arm. Ain't nothing to be ashamed of, honey. Ain't nothing could make me think less of you. Gran turned to her grandson. Her lips thinned.
You been protecting this girl how long now? That,
she pointed to JL's face.
How you call that protection?
It wasn't his fault, Gran, JL said. Gran held up her hand, still staring at Xander. Xander looked down to his boots. When he raised his head back up, his eyes cut right through JL. His stare seemed to say everything he'd ever felt. Intrigue, attraction, longing, and lastly, regret. No. I failed her, Gran, he said, his eyes still locked on JL. I ain't denying it. I'm not enough to keep her safe.
Stop. He needs to stop.
I got some help now, and we're going to be just fine. I won't fail her again. His apologetic stare punched her in the chest. He had nothing to be sorry for.
It wasn't his fault. JL stepped back out of Gran's hold.
I got distracted and wandered off. I should have waited for Xander. The fault isn't his. Xander opened his mouth to interject, but she cut him off with a raised hand.
Before you even go there, I know it's not my fault either. It was just some stupid prick who messed with the wrong people.
She'd been distracted by a little girl who asked her to help her find her mommy. That bright-eyed, blonde little sparkle of joy had gazed at JL with so much hope in her eyes. She hadn't given a second thought to waiting a couple minutes for Xander to go with them. They'd found her mother near the playground, and that's when JL had seen the sign for the maze, and her curiosity had been too strong to overcome. Gran smiled.
All right then, JL. I believe ya.
Then to Xander, you keep her safe from here on out, you hear me? Xander nodded.
Yes, ma'am.
What brought you over here today? JL asked. Gran's eyes went distant.
She said, stopped, frowned, then shook her head. I just wanted to see you two, make sure you were doing good, and neither of you answered my question, where y'all going?
JL looked to Xander for confirmation. He nodded.
We're going to my hometown, Charleston, South Carolina.
Gran raised one eyebrow.
Going to see your folks?
God, I hope not.
JL shook her head.
No, my son, Jason, is there, we think. We're going to find him before he gets into trouble. Her stomach churned. She had no idea what to expect, no idea what they were walking into. Hell, she didn't even know if Jason was actually there yet or if he was even on his way. She'd texted him a few times since he went home after being released from jail. He'd given her short, casual answers. She'd worried he was mad at her for all her lies. Not that she could blame him. Since Mike and his boys had found the letter in Jason's kitchen, he hadn't answered a single phone call or text. He wasn't home, wasn't at school, the gym, with his football team, or at work. There was really only one place that he could be. There. JL closed her eyes. Charleston, the place she hadn't been back to in 20 years. The place she vowed never to venture again. The place with all the memories that threatened to break through the scars marring almost every inch of her back, stomach, breasts, and thighs. Her breathing escalated as those scars burned. Above, 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 above. JL forced her eyes open. We will find him. That's the last song. Xander turned down the radio. Thank you, Lord. JL wasn't sure how much more country she could take. Not that she didn't enjoy a song here and there, but the last hour had been Xander's turn with the stereo in his truck, and JL had a massive headache to show for it. Aw, was that all? She asked, mimicking his smooth southern drawl. His goofy grin did strange things to her belly. Yes, ma'am. That was the end of this particular playlist. You want? I can start another one. JL snorted. No, God, no. What the hell did you name that playlist, anyway? Beers, cheers, and tears? Xander shook his head, giving her a low chuckle that made her feel comfortable. Like a cool, soft blanket had been laying across her chest and stomach, and she was warm but not suffocating. Why don't you go ahead and put your music on? He took his right hand off the steering wheel and held it out with his fingers pointed upward. Then he bent his middle and ring finger down. I'm ready to fucking rock, JL. Put on that headbanging music. Crank it up. The world is a terrible place. I hate all people. Anarchy. Xander punctuated each ridiculous phrase with a jab of his hand in the air. Laughter burst out of her throat before she could stop it. Touché, but really, there's some great bands out there. I'm a lyrics person, but I also enjoy a good guitar riff and a strong beat. She shrugged. Rock is perfect for me. He put his hand back on the wheel and nodded. I get it. He glanced over, their eyes meeting for a second before he turned back to the road. Know what I want to hear? What's that? He turned his head her way, slowly, like he had all the time in the world, like he wasn't driving a big-ass truck 80 miles per hour on an interstate. He raked his eyes down her face, paused for just a moment on her mouth, then continued down her neck and chest, finally resting on her abdomen. She shivered. I want to hear a song from the album that must be pretty damn special to have earned your love. He nodded to her hoodie. A slow smile spread across her face. It was perfect. You're a genius. This album has the song on it. She opened the music app on her phone and scrolled. The song? Yep. You're guaranteed to love it, rock fan or no. She'd only gotten to the C's in her music library when she gave up. She had a shit ton of music. Pulling up the search function, she typed in, I'll follow you. After she connected her Bluetooth to his stereo, she hit play and turned up the volume. They were both silent as they listened. Xander stared at the road the whole time, his brows scrunched. If it weren't for the way his body swayed just slightly to the music, she'd have thought her theory wrong. He continued his silence minutes after the song ended. You didn't like it? He shook his head. No, I did. It's a good song. It just made me think. About what? It reminds me of you and Jason. You'd follow that boy anywhere, wouldn't you? Yeah, pretty much. Xander placed a gentle hand on her knee. It's going to be hard for you, going back there. I can't imagine how you're feeling right now. She turned her head to gaze at the passing trees outside. Yeah, it's hard. He squeezed her knee. You ain't been back since you left? She shook her head. No. Never talk to your family again? Another firm shake of her head. Hell no. Why? JL took a deep breath. We didn't part on good terms. I really don't want to talk about that right now. You know, it occurs to me that you've been doing most of the sharing lately. Tell you what, you ask me anything you want, and I promise to answer honestly. She searched his face. Why would he want to do that? No catch, Angel. You don't gotta share anything back. She smiled. He'd asked for it. Nearly an hour had passed when the last question came to mind. She'd grilled him, and he'd taken all of it well. She knew his favorite food, beer, and professional football team. Soft pretzels, Budweiser, and the Green Bay Packers. She'd asked about his childhood. He'd grown up in church with Gran, big into the youth program, and even sang in the children's choir. She hadn't been able to contain the chuckle that had bubbled up after that mental image. She'd asked about ex-girlfriends, and if he'd been telling the truth, the list was surprisingly short. He claimed he hadn't dated anyone serious in several years. When she'd asked why, he'd laugh deep and hearty. Ain't that many girls my age that's single and not jacked up in the head from past men? She'd cringed. He'd recovered by adding, what I didn't realize until recently was it wasn't their baggage that kept me away. Because once you meet someone whose soul beckons your own, it don't matter what they've been through. You do everything in your power to make them smile enough to clear away some of them past hurts. And you don't rest until the day you've tried to make them laugh. Her face and neck had been on fire after he'd said it. She'd known he was alluding to her, but she wasn't ready to go there. Now she sat here next to him, unsure of her final question. She didn't want to be intrusive, but she did want to know. Fuck it. Why did you leave the police force? She asked, chewing on her bottom lip. His eyes that were on the road widened. His hand clenched the steering wheel. Shit. You don't have to. No, it's fine. He took a deep breath, blowing out hard. You hungry? What? He smiled, but it didn't reach his eyes. I'm not dodging the question. I'm hungry, and I'd rather have this conversation sitting across from you. Yeah, I can eat. She wanted to ask why they were here. She'd wanted to since they'd taken a scenic detour and ended up at Blue Ridges, a quaint restaurant nestled high in the mountains just north of the South Carolina border. But once they'd been seated, she hadn't been able to look away from the view outside the large window next to their table. It was spectacular. She'd grown up near the coast, never taking family trips to the Appalachian Mountains. The only time she'd ever seen them had been when she'd driven away from her hometown 20 years ago. At the time, she'd been in too much of a hurry with too much shit filling her head to appreciate them. Now, sitting here, awed by their beauty, she understood why people called them blue. As far as the eye could see in every direction, she saw the mountains. Not huge, peaked ones like the Rockies or the Alps. These were gentler, more friendly. They rolled between each other, the forest dense, their trees thick, and they were blue. It's the isoprene. What? Had she missed something he'd said? It was entirely possible. The rustic cabin atmosphere of the restaurant and everything else around them had disappeared when she'd looked through the window. The mountains, he pointed to the view. They look blue because of isoprene. She frowned. Had she been thinking out loud? What's isoprene? It's a molecule the oak trees in these mountains give out. It's a way for the trees to protect themselves against stress. They release it, it mixes with the other shit in the air, and we see it as blue. There was something about him speaking like a scientist in that southern drawl of his that made her toes tingle. She shook her head. That was fucking weird. Why did you stop here? He glanced around the restaurant. It was a large log cabin with mismatched cushioned armchairs and huge stone fireplaces. The pedestal tables were made of sturdy wood in various types. The central leg of each one was thicker at the bottom, resembling a tree trunk, and they were all intricately carved. Before they'd sat down, JL had peeked under their table to get a closer look. Their pedestal was horrifyingly stunning. A huge grizzly bear stood on its hind feet, front claws out, snarling. Facing Mama Bear was a giant, menacing wolf. Its fur was bristled and it crouched with a mean snarl that pulled back its lips, revealing deadly teeth. Behind each predator were their respective cubs. Though the grizzly was three times the size, it would have been the wolf who scared her the most if she'd been there. To eat? JL rolled her eyes. No, I mean, why did you stop here? This isn't a road trip, a vacation, or an experience. We're here for one reason. We could have stopped at a McDonald's off an exit. You drove an extra half hour to get here. Why? Xander quietly assessed her. When, finally, he spoke, his voice was soothing. I don't got a clue what we're up against here. What we'll find once we get to Charleston. Could be Jason's easy to find and we bring him home right away. Could be it's more difficult. I feel like this may be one of our last opportunities to sit and catch our breath. He was right. JL didn't know what they'd find either. Jason still hadn't answered his phone, and she was relying solely on instinct and following him to Charleston. The letter had been short but succinct, and she knew her son well enough to know he'd take the chance. She went over the words in her head for the 1,000th time, but still couldn't figure it out. Jason, I have something of yours. I'm keeping it safe for you until you get here to claim it for yourself. Time for a drive. Call me when you get to Charleston. Number is on the card. Love, Dad. Xander's men hadn't found the card. The thing was, it couldn't actually be his father. That man was locked up tight, and his first chance for parole was not for at least 5 more years. Had the letter not said come to Charleston, JL may have taken it as another sick joke, but who would know about this part of her life? She didn't believe in coincidences, especially not ones this big, so what was she missing? Hey, Xander cajoled. Take a deep breath and try to relax. You're going to use up all your energy worrying, and then you'll be leaving me to navigate Charleston by myself. And anyway, this supper was supposed to be about me, he smiled. You ready to hear my sob story or what? JL swallowed, picked up her glass of wine, and nodded for him to continue. It was a little over 4 years ago. At the time, I'd been on the force for about 13 years. Detective for 7 of them. It was my life, the job. Wasn't no time for anything else. I was working vice out on the streets. Very hands-on, it's how I operated. Anyway, I'd had a partner for about a year, Christian Sloan. Sloan was green, straight off the beat. He'd passed his detective exams with honors, I'd heard, but out there on those streets, it's a whole nother ballgame. You don't got multiple choice options while sitting down in a nice air-conditioned room to chew over before you choose your next move. You got to be confident, wary and suspicious, but with a cool head at all times. Sloan struggled a lot at first, and you know, the longer I've pored over the whole thing, the more I realize. He clenched his fist and hung his head. After he gathered himself, Xander looked back up at her. The more I realize that I've been working with him for a year, and no matter how much he'd grown from that first day, I'd still seen him as a kid off the beat, out of his league, clueless. I never gave him a chance. We were tasked with taking down one of the biggest meth dealers in the city. Went by the name of Ghost. We'd come at this guy from every angle we could think of, but he was smart. Careful. Hardly anyone knew who he was, and the few who did weren't the kind to talk. Then one day, on a routine traffic stop, the man's nephew was arrested. We didn't know it was his nephew at the time, but we did know that the meth found in his car was from Ghost. Me and Sloan were called in when the officers realized who the kid, Donnie, worked for. He was 18, so we threw the book at him. Charged him with all kinds of shit. He lived with his mom, who was in a wheelchair, and he took care of her. He went away to prison. His mom wouldn't be in good shape. That's how we got him. He flipped quick, and we spent months prepping him for the takedown. It wasn't until the day before it was set to go down we found out Donnie was related to Ghost. Donnie had been loyal up to that point, so I had no reason to believe their relationship would matter. I told Sloan it was a go the next day. No turning back. Sloan, he seemed reluctant, but he nodded and left for the precinct anyway, for the night. The next day, before we started getting everything ready, Sloan pulled me aside and voiced his doubts. Told me it didn't feel right. Thing was, kids were dying from ghost drugs, and we'd spent months to get to that moment. So I credited Sloan's fears to being green and scared. When we were in the car just minutes before the drop, Sloan pleaded again for me to listen to his doubts, Xander said, choking up. It pissed me off. I went off on him, called him a coward, and told him he didn't deserve to be a detective. Not 2 minutes later, Donnie pulled into the parking lot at the mall. It was secluded there, and the shops hadn't opened yet for the day. We were parked on the road, but real close to the drop point, hidden behind tall bushes. The plan was for Ghost to meet him there. They'd talk a little shop, which we'd hear over the wire, and then Ghost was going to give Donnie a shit ton of drugs to sell. The moment the transfer of goods was made, we were going to rush in and arrest them both. Donnie's arrest was going to be for show, so there wouldn't be retaliation from Ghost's crew. Anyway, shortly after Donnie parked, another car showed. We hadn't ever seen Ghost's face, so there was a code word for Donnie that he was supposed to use to verify it was actually him. Rain. That was the word. First thing Donnie said when both men had gotten out of their cars was, "Looks like it might rain later." That was our cue. We exited the car and waited while looking through the bushes. After a little chat, Ghost turned to open the trunk. He handed Donnie a duffel bag and we stormed. The blue mountains outside their window reflected in Xander's watery eyes. When we emerged, Donnie had a gun pointed at my partner. Ghost got in his car and peeled out. I tried to talk to Donnie, to talk him down. His face was hard as stone while he pointed that weapon at Sloan's head. I didn't think. Xander hung his head in his hands. His shoulders moved up and down as he choked on the memory. I didn't think the kid would do it. I told him to put it down repeatedly. He turned his head to me. His eyes were dead, emotionless. Months after that, I realized the fucking kid had played us from day one. He wasn't some scared little punk who'd had to turn to selling drugs to support his family. He was a cold-blooded killer. "Fuck you" were the only words he spoke before he pulled the trigger. He killed my partner and himself with those two shots to Sloan's head. I pulled my trigger not 2 seconds after he did. 2 seconds too fucking late. She traced the grooves in the table while Xander took a moment to compose himself. How long had it been since he'd talked about it? Had he ever? Life had dealt them both shit hands, but here they were, having a good meal with a breathtaking view, living in spite of it. Xander cleared his throat. I resigned the next day. Couldn't handle the guilt. Couldn't take being assigned a replacement partner. I didn't deserve that badge. Didn't deserve any title. My failures caused the death of a good man. A young man with a sweet wife and two little kids who didn't have their daddy because his partner was a cocky prick. My dad got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer 2 months later. 2 months in which I'd lived off savings and drank from sunup to sundown. After his prognosis was found to be terrible, I moved him in with me. I stopped drinking and worked odd jobs in security, making a name for myself. Dad passed a year after he came to live with me. He willed me his savings and life insurance and told me before he died that I was to use that money to start over, to build a new life when he was gone. So I did. I'd worked a lot with Mike in those odd jobs, and I asked him to go into business with me. That was about 3 years ago. Her heart broke for him, for the man who blamed the world's woes on himself. She understood his shame, but hated it all the same. JL stood. She rounded the table as he pushed himself away from it, angling his chair so it put them face to face when she got down on one knee in front of him. She stared at the face of the man who had put his entire life on hold for her, the man to whom she'd given her saddest memories, her worst fears, and he'd held them in his hand like a precious gift. the man who had helped mend her broken pieces. His sea-green eyes held her captivated as she trailed her hand down the scruff on his cheek. "You are a good man," she told him. "You deserve every ounce of happiness this life has to offer you." And then she kissed him. Interesting. Okay, wow. So I guess that's why Xander is the way he is about, like, Seth and his team and them needing to be well-trained. It sounds to me like he's got this little thing in his head that he's still fucked up from when he was a cop and his partner died. Tragic and terrible. Wow. Okay, so also the corn maze, that was weird. Like, somebody attacked her, took her purse, shit was falling out of it as he was running away from her. She follows him, ends up finding her purse, and nothing is taken. Sounds suspicious. Anyway, now we know that the story is heading to South Carolina. So back where it all began for JL, where she was taken, where she grew up, where she was held captive, where she was tortured and raped, where she escaped, all of those bad memories, she's got to face them. She's going back. So how was she going to do this? We know that she was very fragile, especially toward the beginning of the book. These demons still haunt her. So how is she going to hold up when she's faced with them? And we know she's stronger because Xander mentions it, but man, what the fuck is going on with that letter? That can't be his dad, right? Because he's in jail. So who is sending Jason this letter? Who is luring him to South Carolina, and fucking why? And what else was in that envelope? And will JL and Jason find him before something bad happens? I guess you're going to have to fucking listen to find out next episode. At least some of those questions will be answered in the next episode. Make sure you subscribe so that when it randomly comes out, it will be up there on your podcast app, dashboard, whatever you want to call it. It'll be there for you. You can listen, and if you have any questions, comments, concerns, complaints, send them to villainsandmonsters@gmail.com. I'm also going to include my links in the show notes. I don't know why the fuck I haven't done this yet. Duh. I'll probably go back through all my old show notes and add them in. But I have one link, and it takes you to this page where it has everything that I'm on, social media, my books, my website, my club, my mailing list, everything. All of my information is there, so you can just follow me wherever you like. You guys have a fabulous fucking weekend. Bye.